We're switching stories now. When that big earthquake hit Peru last week, a man by the name of Wilbur Quispe was one of thousands who felt the tremors and left his home near the sea after warnings that there might be a tsunami. However, Wilbur and his family made it through that event unharmed. Wilbur Quispe is a notable figure because he's one of Peru's master weavers. If you go to our website at thestory.org, you can see the kind of work that he does. I recently had a chance to talk with Wilbur, in part because his is such an improbable story. When he was very small, both his mother and father died, and at the age of 8, he left his village alone and wound up working for a cruel and abusive farmer.
Not only did he never pay me, and he really kept me like a slave. I just had to work all the time. In fact, he would force me to do things that I wasn't capable of doing, knowing that I wasn't capable of doing them. And not only that, there was also beating, constant beating, and also hardships like, for example, the patrones, they live in the city, but we work in the fields, and between the field is like an hour distance, and they would make me go back since they wouldn't want me to sleep in the city with them. They would send me there on my own, see how I could get there, and so it was very difficult.
What kind of jobs did you do while you were there?
¿Qué tipo de trabajo hacías cuando estabas ahí? I was doing a lot of basically all the farm work that was necessary. The plants that they had there were mostly coffee and cacao, and also the coca. A lot of it was very hard labor, like carrying heavy bags. And this one time I remember the bag was way too heavy for me to carry, and so I fell. And on top of being hurt from falling, I was beaten up for falling.
What was it, though, that finally happened that forced you or caused you to say that enough, I'm leaving?
Después de eso, todavía,
I had many incidents when I thought of leaving, before I actually left. But on the one hand, I didn't want to leave without getting my pay, but I kept asking for it, complaining, and they would never pay me. So I did. I was hoping that at some point I would get the pay and then leave, But the other thing that developed at the time was that they started telling me that if you leave now and go back to your village, the Shining Path, they are grabbing all the boys, and they are either forcing them into things or killing them even. So if you don't want to lose your life, you have to stay with us. That's what the patrones would tell me.
And there was truth to that, right? The Shining Path was at that time taking young men.
No, exactamente eso es tiempo.
I didn't know if it was true or not. And I still don't. At the time, I had no contact with that other part of Peru, So these were just things, and especially coming from my patrones, I had real suspicions that these were probably lies. They just didn't want me to go. So I didn't know for sure that this was going on. But I was still very afraid to leave, And at the same time, what happened was that they took me away to Atambo, which is a little further away from Santa Marta in the jungle where I was, because they, at that point, the children of the patrones, they were going to school there. So at that point, they decided I would be their caretaker. So I became a little bit like their mother. I would cook for them. I would clean them. I would take them to school, make sure they were okay. So while I was taking care of them in such an intimate way, at the same time, they treated me like I was worth nothing. I had no clothes. I was only the worst clothes that they were already ready to throw away. They would give to me.
Remind me, Wilbur, how old you were when this was going on?
¿Qué edad tenías cuando estabas cuidando a los demás niños ahí en Tambo?
Ya tenía ya como 12 años ya.
I was 12 years old.
There must have been one thing, though, that caused you to leave. What was that?
Había un momento de que
this one time, they had dogs where we were in Tambo, and I was always cleaning very carefully. This one time, though, when they came unannounced, sometimes they would come late at night, and I was sleeping, and the dogs kept urinating inside the house because they asked us to keep them inside, and I would usually clean it up in the morning whenever I saw it. But this one time, I woke up, basically, and the patrones were already there, and the patrona, she saw the
dog pee on the floor.
Yeah, dark pee on the floor, and she basically grabbed the broom and started beating me really harshly, calling me indio, cholo, these very pejorative terms for racist terms. And she was so angry, and she kept beating me to the point that my head started bleeding. And she kicked me out to the street, started yelling, "You will never be coming back here, go away." And I was terrified. I was, you know, I of course couldn't go back at that moment. So what I did was I knew this man who worked at the gas station nearby, and I went to see him, and he saw that I was bleeding, so he helped me a little bit, but he also told me you have to go to the police. So at that point, I went to the police station.
And you stayed there for some time, yeah?
I went to the police station, and the sergeant and two policemen went to the... They immediately said, well, we have to go get the patrona, you know, the landlady. And they went there, but of course, at that point, they had already realized, the patrones had realized that something would happen, so they had left. So they were just... The police were told that they had left for the holidays or something. They made something up. And what the police told me was that I had to stay with them until they could get a hold of the patrones to clarify the situation. And they said that during the day I could stay at the station and do some work, so they had me doing work or you sleep there at the station during the day, but at night I couldn't stay there. And for that whole month I slept mostly in trees, and it was cold, so it was very difficult.
So was the patrona ever called to account for the beating?
It was basically about a month after she beat me up so badly that it was July 28th, I remember. It was a morning. And so I went to the station because I would check in on them once in a while. I got there, and the patrona and the patron were already there, and they had with them a case of beer that they were handing to the police officers. The captain, the police captain that was had promised to help me, was not there at the moment, so I couldn't talk to him. And they were clearly arranging something, these policemen and the patrones. They were chatting, and at the time I didn't speak Spanish. I spoke Quechua. So I could understand some of what they were saying, but not everything. So I understood that they were making an arrangement, but I didn't have any specific information. All the policemen told me was that they would pay me everything, the patrones, that I should just go back to them. They would pay me everything, that what they owed me for the whole year, at some point soon.
What happened next?
¿Y qué pasó entonces? I went back to them, and the next day we went to the jungle to continue the work that I would usually do. And they promised they would pay me and everything, but of course another 2 months went by, and I still didn't get any pay. So I waited, but after 2 months, I said, I'm going to complain. So I complained, and the lady got furious. She grabbed a machete and said that
A
machete, yeah. And she grabbed a machete, and she started chasing me, and she was ready to hit me with it, basically was yelling things that I was an ungrateful person, that they were raising me and taking care of me. But she was ready to kill me, and that's what she, with a machete in her hand, she kept chasing me and saying, I'm going to kill you right now. And at that point, that's when I decided I'm leaving.
I want to move the story ahead just a bit here. Eventually, you made it back to your own village. What were things like when you went back? Was it a more dangerous place? Was the Shining Path in control at that time?
Hasta el momento que llegué a mi pueblo, no sabía.
I had no idea it was that bad when I went. I was on my way back to the village, but the moment I got there, Shining Path was all over the place. They were running the town. And not long after I got back, they killed three very close people, a couple and one of my neighbors. And it was basically, it was full moon, so we could see clearly. It was a group of about 60 of them, of the Shining Path members. And they would take pairs of them and guard at our door so we couldn't go out and see what was going on. And at night, late at night, they would do these assassinations.
And at this time, they had already killed how many people in your village, Wilbur?
Bastante, porque...
Many, many people. And they would specifically target, especially at the beginning, the people with most ownings, belongings, cattle, and also the smarter people, the people who would not be argued into becoming part. If they basically resisted on an intellectual ground, they would be killed. It was a lot of people.
What's the one image that's in your mind from that time, Wilbur, the one thing that you remember was an awful moment in trying to deal with the Shining Path?
One night at the family where I was staying, we were all sleeping, but we heard some noise, and we saw that there were two Shining Path members outside. And they had grabbed the head of the family and took him outside. And I was always very curious. So I basically went. They didn't see me, but I went through this window where I could see everything that was going on. And they were arguing with the man. And basically, he at the point was trying to form this community association He was like a village president, but in opposition to the Shining Path. So they were interrogating him very forcefully and telling him, where are the weapons? We want to know where you have the weapons. And he kept insisting, I have no weapons. There are no weapons here. And I was seeing this happening. And then all of a sudden I just heard a shot. And I saw that they had shot him right in the head. And they left. And the next morning we found him on the ground.
I'm talking with Wilbur Quispe. He is a master weaver from Peru. You're listening to The Story from American Public Media. I'm Dick Gordon. Eventually, Wilbur found his way from his village to a town called Ayacucho. And this is where his story takes a completely unpredictable turn.
I walked for several hours, for 4 hours, from, you know, the village. And at that point, there was a bus. I took the bus to get to the city. And after about an hour or longer on the bus, I realized that I had left my satchel before getting on the bus with all of my belongings. And I was so angry at myself. But I basically had left everything I owned, which wasn't much, but I left it all there. So I basically arrived in the city with nothing. And I had no idea what I would eat, where I would sleep. I just walked and walked and walked in the city for hours until I arrived in the Parque Central, the Central Park, in Ayacucho, and I saw this lady, and for some reason I decided I would talk to her. And I asked her just plainly, can I stay with you tonight? And she said, yes, you can, but not only that, she asked me, where are you from, what's your name? And at that point I said my last name, and she started explaining that she knows not only my father, my family, but she knows my brother, and I should come with her to her house. We went back home to her place and started eating, and at that point a young man walked in, and he sat down to eat as well. I basically hadn't seen my brother in about 5 years, and I was very little the last time I saw him. So to me, this man was a stranger. In fact, I thought he was related to her, to the lady who had taken me in. So we didn't even talk to each other. We barely even looked at each other. We were just eating there until the lady asked us, why do you not talk to each other if you're brothers? And it was at that point that we realized and we really started looking at each other, recognizing each other, and it was a very, very great moment.
Wilbur Quispe soon discovers that his brother has become quite a respected weaver of traditional Peruvian carpets. In fact, his weavings helped keep alive a skill that had almost been snuffed out over time. In just a moment, I'll talk more with Wilbur about how he got drawn into the profession, and you can see pictures of the work on our website. You can find us at thestory.org. However, you'll also hear Wilbur struggle to convince himself early on that weaving is something that he could do and something that would make him enough money to survive. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. I'm talking with the Peruvian weaver Wilbur Quispe, and as he's already explained, he discovered this craft late in life after he found a brother that he thought he'd lost. Remember, Wilbur had lost both parents earlier. He'd survived the cruelty of life as a bonded laborer and witnessed the evil of the Shining Path guerrilla movement, and he was still just a very young man.
¿Cuántos años tenías en cuando esto
sucedió? 13 años.
13 years.
And so you had been 5 years pretty well on your own, no idea where brothers or sisters were, and all of a sudden you discover this brother that you barely knew you had.
Yo siempre sabía que yo tenía un hermano.
I always knew I had a brother, and I always looked forward. I was always hoping that at some point in my life I would see him again. I never thought it would happen like this, and at that point, I had gotten myself ready to think with all the things that were going on and the toughness of life. I had assumed that he was either dead or in a prison, or basically in the shining path, So I wasn't ready for it, and so this was a big surprise.
Like a miracle.
Como un milagro.
Sí, para mí ha sido un milagro.
Yes, at that point, once we knew we were brothers at her house, we started laughing and talking and crying, and after much crying and laughing, we talked all night. We told each other our stories, what had happened in all these years. And after that, he told me, you know, I know how to weave, and I can teach you so we can work together.
What did you think at that time, the idea of weaving?
No tenía nada de...
I had no idea what it meant. It didn't mean anything to me. So I basically said, you know, he does it. I love my brother. I'm so happy we're back together, and I will do whatever he does. It sounds good.
Was there a time, Wilbur, when you realized that your brother was a talented man and that he was teaching you some... a special kind of craft.
Claro, ¿por qué no? Porque,
of course, later I understood the meaning of this. But at the time, I was just so thrilled and happy that we'd met. And also, he took me to the market. He bought me clothes, something I hadn't had in so many years. So he took care of me. You know, we ate. And we, at that point, after I'd eaten and we'd gotten closer, I thought we did go to see some of these weavings. And then I started to understand that these were not just things to sleep on, you know, that these were special weaves.
And was there a time that you remember, Wilbur, when you thought to yourself, this is something I would really like to do and something I would really like to be good at?
Bueno, en ese momento, no.
It took quite a long time. At the beginning, I only did it, not because I thought I could be any good at it. I had no idea. I just mostly did it out of faith for my brother. I had faith in him completely. And I also had faith in his patience. I knew he was a very patient teacher. So I said, well, it might take a long time, but I will learn it because of him, you know? So we did our first weave together, and it had a lot of mistakes, you know, but we finished it. So I actually was a slow learner, but once I learned, I was very happy where I had gotten.
I think you're being a little bit humble here. I mean, in 1995, you won Peru's national weaving contest. That must have been quite a moment for you.
Pues la verdad, Wilbur, yo creo que estás siendo un poco modesto, porque yo sé que en 1995 ganaste el Premio Nacional del Perú por un tejido que hiciste.
92, 3, 4.
In 92, 93, and 94.
Hey, see, entonces, you're more important than I even thought you were.
Entonces estás siendo muy modesto y eres mucho, mucho más importante que estás hablando.
Bueno, gracias a Dios.
I'm very grateful to God, that he gave me a talent. In fact, I sometimes feel like this might have been God's plan all along.
Did you think at that time, Wilbur, that you had reached some level of status in society? Here you were a champion weaver. You could maybe make rugs for, you know, the fine families in Peru, that you had reached a level of wealth and prestige.
Bueno, de esa parte,
I don't give much importance to these things, the awards and prizes. I know they have a certain value, so I don't deny that, but I don't give them much importance. Although it was a new and interesting experience for me. For example, with the first award I got was in dollars, which was in itself just being in dollars, a very strange thing. And my wife she didn't understand what this was about, this award. And out of mobility reasons, I ended up staying that night in the city where the award ceremony was going on. I received the prize and then came back the next morning. I came with all these dollars, and my wife was incredulous. What do you mean? An award for what? She didn't really. I really had to explain and convince her that I had won these dollars through my weaving. You know.
But there was a time when you were very close to giving up on this profession. I don't understand that.
Claro, después de
my spirit was always full of art, so I loved making these weavings, and I was making excellent quality work. The problem was that buyers, mostly exporters, who were buying from me, weren't paying what it actually was worth. So I went bankrupt as a business. It just couldn't survive. It wasn't that I ever stopped loving it. So at that point, it was more of a family decision when it was clear that this weaving was not working. So as a family, we decided we would go back to my village. But to do that, I decided I would go to Lima, you know, and whatever materials I still had, I would weave and do these things and sell them in Lima. So, and with that money, send it to the family so we could go back to my village.
Time now to introduce an American woman named Melanie Eberts. She was interested in Peruvian textiles, and she was looking for opportunities to work with a fine weaver. She wasn't having a lot of luck, but then there was this fateful encounter between Wilbur and Melanie.
There was a curfew. There were frequent blackouts. When I was there, there's a little neighborhood right outside of the city. It's just a 5-minute walking distance called Santana, and that is known to be where all the weavers live. And I spent 3 or 4 days trying to connect with people in Santana, and it was really hard. It was very, very obvious to me that these people really lived in terror, because I had been in Peru enough to know that whenever a gringa shows up in a town where crafts are being made, people know why you're there. They practically meet you at the bus,
yeah,
and bring you to their homes, and there's just one reason, and it can only be good for them if they find you. And I expected that people would just kind of call me off the alleyways and bring me into their homes and their weaving studios, because it's never always obvious where the weaving is being done behind the adobe walls. And nobody would open their doors, and it was kind of like vacant. I knew people were behind the walls, but people were fearful, and nobody was offering to take me into their homes.
As I understand it, then, Wilbur is at the end of his rope as a master weaver, wondering if he's ever going to be able to, you know, find someone who will help him make a living at this. You're at the end of your patience in trying to find the master weaver that you've been looking for. What's the moment when you first saw Wilbur? Do you remember that?
I do very well. And about 96, when I went back to Ayacucho, because things had gotten better, they had captured the leader, Abimael Guzman. They captured him in 1992.
Guzman was the head of the Shining Path, and his capture,
yes,
really began the end of their reign of terror, right?
It did.
Yeah, okay.
It did. And so when I went back to Ayacucho in 96, I was walking the neighborhoods, and people were asking me into their houses, and I was actually just walking by a long alleyway. And he was down at the very end of it, and I could just see a little bit of something that was on his loom, and I was really drawn to walk down that alleyway and see what he had on his loom. It kind of called us from afar.
I need you to tell me what you saw on the loom that day. You must have seen something that made you realize that this man had the kind of talent that you hadn't seen. Was it in the color? Was it in the finery? I mean, be a camera for those of us who aren't as familiar with these rugs.
This rug was very intricate. It was a very ethnic design, but very sophisticated. A lot of cats and interlock pattern, very common in Peru, but it was the finest. The scale of the design was very small, which makes it a lot more complicated to weave at that level. Normally, you would see that whole scale blown up much larger. It's faster to weave a larger design. So the scale of his design and his figures were just very intricate, and it was very obvious. I really felt almost immediately that I had met the weaver that I had been looking for all those years. And we started to talk, and he told me that he lived outside of Lima, and I had no idea that that was his last day of weaving. And it was practically my last day, really, of looking for the weaver I was hoping to meet in Santana without much success up until that point. And so he scribbled a little direction on a scratch paper for me about where he lived. And that was back in one of those shanty towns outside of Lima. And I said that I would be back there in a week and that I would come and look him up. And that's how we left it.
Let me, if I can, just bring Wilbur back into the conversation. Do you remember that moment, Wilbur? Do you remember when Melanie came to you, and there you were working on this last piece?
Creo que el momento...
Yes, it was a great, wonderful moment, and I do think it was God's plan, because I was really I just wanted to sell that last piece, and I worked like crazy to finish this, because I thought this was my day, I would be able to finish. All I was ever thinking of at this point was that I could sell this last piece.
Before they could reconnect, Melanie had to decipher the scribbled directions and actually find Wilbur in the shantytown as arranged. Now, he spoke mainly his native language of Quechua, and her Spanish was not very good, so there wasn't a whole lot of communication between them at this point. Melanie also didn't know that Wilbur was planning on abandoning his profession.
So I really didn't understand all what was happening and that his future kind of relied on me looking him up. I was very excited at the time about looking him up. And quite honestly, when I got back to Lima, it's a big city and it was hot and dusty, and it was a week later, and maybe I kind of forgot how excited I was about the whole deal, or maybe I wasn't as sure, just with a week passing by of travel, etc. And I had this little scribbled piece of paper with this, you know, direction on it, and I knew it was going to be hard to find him, and it was going to be like I started to feel a little bit lazy, quite honestly, when I was back in Lima, and again, it was like 90 degrees, and I thought, oh, do I want to go out to this dusty shanty town with maybe a 50% chance of finding him, according to this little scribbled direction that he gave me? And an inner voice just said, you have to go, you have to make the effort. And so I did, and it's a shanty town. They all have straw huts. There's no... you know, street signs.
Names,
or
no numbers on the house.
No names, no numbers, right. And on top of it, you know, Wilbur being orphaned, his birth name was Wilbur, but his parents called him Pedro. And then when he got to Ayacucho, when he had met up with his brother Charlie, he started to take a real liking to boxing. And so his neighbors started calling him Mario. So depending who you asked, when I was walking around the dusty roads looking for him, really nobody knew him as Wilbur Quispe. He didn't have a real reason to use it. They never signed their name. They had no paperwork. You know, miraculously, I did find him. It took a couple hours, but they all could direct me when we finally figured out it was the weaver I was looking for. And I knew the word tejedor, and so they did direct me there.
And I was wondering if back at that time, Wilbur had any idea that this would be the beginning of such an important friendship. Well, he said, no, not really, but he still refers to Melanie and her people as his angels.
They asked about Morguis, and I said, I have no capital to even get the materials. And they trusted enough in me to give me, an advance money so I could buy the materials to weave. And at that point, I felt appreciated. I thought, well, if they believe in me, you know. So they inspired me to continue in this work of weaving. And ever since, our relationship has just gotten stronger and closer, and I hope it lasts, forever. I feel I'm more like family right now, and so it's the same with my wife and everyone. We just feel very close. And I also, you know, so I'm incredibly grateful to them, and I would like to... I thank them for everything, but also I'm very grateful to Americans who appreciate the good work, quality weaving, and I'm always very grateful to them.
Wilbur, thank you for coming in. It was great to have you on the program.
Muchísimas gracias, Wilbur, por hablar con nosotros. Fue un placer tenerte en el programa.
Muchas gracias a ustedes por tomar un interés por la historia y por nosotros. Espero que no se olviden, ¿no?, de nosotros.
Thank you very much for your interest in our work, in our story, and thank you, and I hope you don't forget about us.
Melanie, thank you so much for coming in as well.
It was an honor. Thank you.
Melanie Eberts is the founder of Art Andes, and Wilbur Quispe is one of her master craftsmen. He lives now in Lurin, Peru. If you'd like to look more at the art, you can find some links on our website at thestory.org. Now, when Wilbur was with me, he sang one of the songs that he will sing to himself when he's weaving.
Bueno, esta canción es siempre ha cantado mi padre y madre también.
This is a song that my father always sung, my mother always sung it. It's always with me. I think of it all the time. And I love singing it to friends. And it's a song in Quechua. So it's not in Spanish, and it's called La Cárcel de Huamanga.
Cerro Rasuica, relito de nimi. Cerro Rasuica, relito de nimi. Ritiki chao pimpi, pacachai kulawai, perseguidos cani. Ritiki chao pimpi.